'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
In Scott Johnson's pants? Oh, no, you didn't.
Quiet, you.
Psst. Oi.
They slam their crap together, bump their junk, if you know what I mean.
Get your geek on. Get your geek on.
You, on the other hand, are in your bed going,
those people will never bother us again.
Every week there's like 50 of you turning some age. I'm just rubbing it. It's just nervousness.
Maybe I'm just greasy.
You're too much of a racist, and you know I'm not going to buy your books because you're a racist.
I thought it was lots of crutch.
Or a chick, as you're sometimes known.
Oi!
Merry Christmas, Miss Pac-Man.
Merry Christmas, Pac-Man.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, my stars. I've never been so busy before. It seems Christmas arrives sooner each year.
Hey, if you can see what I got. Got them bells.
Honey, bring more eggnog.
From the snowy peaks of the Rocky Mountains, through the harsh Colombian jungle, and all over the damn American South, this is Extra Life Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Extra Life Radio. I'm Scott Johnson. With me is my cold. And you're listening to ELR number 164 for December 20th, 2007.
And now for your host, Scott Johnson.
One measly week. Actually, not even a week. Not even a whole week. Just about 4 or 5 days from Christmas. Hope everybody's having a great holiday season. A little shout out to Kristen from the Manic Mommies. How's it going? We exchanged holiday greetings today over email. So, you know, that's how it goes. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that GoDaddy.com is a sponsor of this here program. You can use WOW1, WOW2, or WOW3 as your code and save money on internext.com and various other services over there to the GoDaddy.com. So go check them out and get your piece of the internet today. We have a very interesting topic today and a very interesting lack of one of us here today. Brian Dunaway is not on Skype. We waited an extra, I don't know, half hour, 32 minutes for Brian, and he has still not shown up. His Skype status says busy. So we are hoping he'll show up, but joining me, as always, is CommissionComic.com's own Obsidian. Welcome to the show, sir.
You know what I was thinking about today?
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm Latin American, right? I'm Colombian. Everybody knows this.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that about you.
My native language is Spanish. Now, every single time they show a foreigner in an American movie, and that foreigner, for any reason whatsoever, is angry, they unavoidably start blurting out all their anger in their native language.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Why is that? I guess that's what you're asking. Why does that happen?
Yeah, why is that? That never happens to me.
I don't know.
You know, my native language is Spanish. I speak Spanish all day. You know, it's all around me.
Sure.
And yet when I'm in an environment where I have to speak English and I get angry, I don't start uncontrollably blurting out stuff in Spanish.
No.
That makes no sense.
You've never done it on this show. I've never known you to do that before. I think it's it must be a movie only thing. Who knows? That's crazy.
Yeah, I get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Well, what we're hoping collectively here, folks, is that that Brian is safe, that he is not in some sort of strange car accident. I shouldn't even say these things because if it does happen, then you feel terrible. So never mind. Whatever it is with Brian, I'm sure it's fine. He'll if he pops in mid-show, we'll bring him in. I've done a little poke to a couple of people if they want to hop in, but they haven't answered, so we'll see. But I think we can drive this bus, dude. We'll be fine. We've done this before.
Yeah.
Plenty of times. I want to do something, yes, and since it's our last show before Christmas, I wanted to do something a little bit special. I want to dedicate the entire program, and unfortunately, it's the show where I have
to the memory of Brian.
Yeah, not to the memory of Brian. It's funny because this is the show where I've got like the worst cold in a year, and I can't stop coughing, and we're short a guy, and Obsidian's tired, and we all have the gout.
The gout?
I'm kidding. I don't even know what the gout is. I've never determined what the gout is.
Okay.
It just sounds terrible. And I'll tell you what I used to do with my kids. We'd go to McDonald's or something back in the day, and when they were little, and they would say, I want fries. I want French fries. And I'd say, you better be careful. Those fries have the blight. And they never understood what I was talking about. They thought it sounded like some terrible disease. But all I was really saying to them was those potatoes have a lack of potatoes. Excuse me. And so, yeah, the blight. Do that with your kids. Tell everyone that your potatoes have the blight. I enjoy that.
That's good parenting. That's Scott Johnson.
That's right. Dr. Phil would be proud. I'm sure.
Wait, is this the last show of the year?
No, I think we're going to squeeze one more in next Thursday. So, yeah.
That would be what?
Next Thursday would be the 20. Hold on.
It's not even 30. Okay.
Yeah, it's the 30th is the following Sunday, so I guess that makes that like the 27th or something, 26th, whatever. Know. Anyway, we'll be here next week to kind of kick off the new year. We'll do our best of end of year stuff and all that hoochie. So that'll be
fun.
You
know, here in Colombia, the 28th of December is the equivalent of your April Fool's Day.
Oh, really? You guys have your own version of that? I had no idea. Did you tell? This is familiar, though. Have you told us this before?
I have no idea.
The listeners would know. Seamus would know. My guess is... Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, that was creamy.
That was a good one. My guess is that is an awesome time for all Colombians. I forget what I was going to ask.
Actually, it's pretty stupid.
I hear that sneezes and coughs actually kill active brain cells, like the active neurons that are moving around to do whatever your current thought is. But if you cough really hard, you'll kill the thought. Like, you'll forget what you were doing. Wonder if that's true.
I don't know. It's awesome, though. Imagine the possibility.
Yeah, imagine what it'd be like on this show if that's what happens. Oh, please let it not happen. All right.
You know that you can't sneeze and leave your eyes open.
True that. I got an email. I wanted to do, this is kind of a special thing. This is our last show before Christmas, and I want to dedicate it to somebody. Matt from Switzerland sent me an email about his cousin, who at 11 years old contracted this hideous like kidney disease thing, and it's really kept the kid down, but he's been really strong and kept kind of fighting through it. He's had successive surgeries, and I think the last one was pretty successful, although he's still not really able to do much. But apparently, he's an enormous fan of the show, huge fan of the show. And I told Matt, by his request, that we would dedicate today's show to Max Schmorhun, I think I'm saying it right, Schmorhun, from Geneva, Switzerland. So Max,
oh, he's neutral.
Yeah, he's neutral. He doesn't have a feeling one way or the other. So Max, this show is for you. However good or bad it may be, dude, we dedicate it to you, and I think it's great that you're fighting the good fight and keep it up. So that was that.
Yep.
Now just a little more business to take care of. I got a lot of grief the last couple of weeks that we do these birthday announcements on the show, and they hate them, except for the people that you know whose birthday it is.
Except for the guy that. Is having your birthday.
Yeah, exactly. If you're turning 21 and I say your name, I guess you like it because that's why you emailed me in the first place. However, I'm going to meet in the middle. See, I'm all about coming up with solutions that work for everyone. And so here's my solution. No longer will I read the big long emails or do it in the voice that you want or any of that stuff. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, from now on, we just say happy birthday to you all.
We're going to say happy birthday to Max, Jen from Ian, Crimson Fox, Brian from his son Clark, Lauren, D from Amy, and Sarah. Ding, 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 ding. That's it. There's birthdays. Congratulations to all of you for getting older. And Blaze, who asked his girlfriend to marry him right here on the show through us, if you guys remember that, he just wanted to let everyone know that it worked and they are indeed getting
great.
Married. Yeah. It's actually going to happen.
It actually worked. Wow.
Which is amazing.
Figure.
Very exciting.
I can definitely see this birthday section not lasting long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's already over, in fact. In fact, it's so
no,
over.
No, I mean not lasting long into the future.
Oh, I see. You might be right. People may not be that interested in hearing their birthdays if I just read off your names. But I'm making a compromise here, folks. I will state that Matt and Tessa are getting married on the 2nd. That's all I'm going to say. That's it with the birthdays. That's it with the weddings. Everyone's getting married. Everyone's happy. Everyone's growing old. It's good. All right.
Okay. You want to hear something lame?
Please.
And if somebody that actually knows these people or whatever listens to this, I'm probably going to take heat for this. But...
I can't wait, dude. You're going to take heat? Sweet. Someone besides me. Go ahead.
No. But this, I mean, I'm not going to offend it. Well, whatever. Okay.
Okay.
Some people I know are getting married tomorrow, which I don't think getting married. I know not tomorrow, on Saturday. I don't think getting married December 22nd is a very good idea.
Why? Like too close to Christmas?
Yeah. I think that when there's a big holiday, you should like keep your events, under a leash. On a leash. I mean, getting married 2 days from Christmas? Nah.
That seems a little nutty to me, too. But what if you're born like on the 23rd or 24th?
Oh, that's not your fault. True. That's your a little different.
Fault. Yeah, it's your parents' fault. Anyway, your point.
No, they're getting married on the 22nd. They let everybody know like 5 days ago or something like that, which is always pretty lame.
Yeah.
They're getting married at 9 a.m.
Goodness gracious.
I mean, why would you get married at 9 a.m.?
Well, we got married at 8:30 a.m.
Why?
So I you know what? I don't know. I look back on it now, and I don't know why we did it so early. It may have been...
Okay, what time did the party end?
That night at about 10:30.
Well,
and then it was time to get it on. Woo! Sorry.
Okay, that's a little too much.
Sorry. Blah blah.
Old man Johnson.
Seriously, I got the consumption or whatever. Anyway.
But no, I mean, these people are planning to get married at 9. And then just have like a little brunch, and that's it. That's
it. They should just wait then. They should just do it at 11 and then have lunch, regular lunch. Forget brunch.
Yeah, get married at McDonald's.
That's what I say. Do it in the ball pit, the plastic ball pit. That's interesting. Awesome. Now, are they doing it near Christmas because they're pagan like you and they don't care? Like the holiday means nothing to them? Or am I assuming too much about how you feel about Christmas?
You're assuming way too much because...
all right, because you like free stuff. You like gifts as much as the next guy.
Well, you see, that is basically the different ages of man. When you're young, you know you're young because you get presents. When you're an adult, you know you're an adult because nobody gives you Christmas presents. And when you're old again because people start giving you presents again.
Wow. Look at that. You know how I knew I was young?
No.
I didn't have any hair in strange places. Number two was where when I knew I was getting older, my feet smelled like Doritos. And how I knew I'm old is my cold lasts 6 days longer than it does for the average young person. So I've got it all mapped out. I got all the right indicators. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you know what age you are.
Yeah, apparently. Anyway, so congratulations to all of you. Can we talk real quick before we get to our main topic about the new Batman trailer? I am absolutely beside myself with excitement, and I think that if I hear anyone else say they don't think Heath Ledger is the right guy to play the Joker, at least if that trailer's any indication, he's dead on for what I want from the Joker. So I'm really excited that he's in it, and I'm excited about many of the things I saw in the trailer, including a brief glimpse of Harvey Dent, who shows up very briefly. Your thoughts? Have you seen the whole trailer? I assume you have, the 2-minute one.
Yeah, I saw it. I'm definitely gonna go see it, and if it's anything like the first movie at all, it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
Batman Begins is one of those movies that you just don't get tired of seeing it.
Yeah. No, you never get tired of it, dude. I love that movie. I've seen it, I don't know, 15 times or something. I love it.
Yeah, I've seen it. But my thoughts on the trailer, and not necessarily a bad thing, were that it looks a lot more like an action movie than the first.
Really? That's an interesting take. I haven't looked at it that way. But maybe you're right. There's a lot more car
You got a bunch of explosions and car chases and car crashes and stuff like that. And it definitely looks a lot more like this one. Is much more of an action movie.
So this might be this is like Empire Strikes Back or Temple of Doom You know, where they just up the action level a little bit. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's. I don't think it's very safe to assume what's going to happen. But yeah. It's probably, you know, Batman. You know, he takes out his machine gun, smokes a cigar. You know, classic Batman.
Sorry. Oh my gosh, I'm coughing so hard. I swear, the part of my colon popped out and went back in. All right, let's move on from that, and let's take a step back in time for our main topic.
You're listening to the Extra Life Radio Archives. In the modern era of video games, first-person shooters was one of the first genres to use key technologies such as 3D graphics, online play, and modeling. Enhanced realism combined with graphic violence has made the first-person shooter a common topic in ongoing controversies over video games. First-person shooters came to be recognized as a genre in the early 90s, and many of the genre's most common conventions date to this time. However, the modern genre is an extension of earlier games, particularly those involving 3D graphics. While some of these early games are not first-person shooters in the modern sense, some of them might be retroactively included in the genre, and many others contain ideas which later influenced the modern game. Let's listen to our experts talk BS out of their bumholes about first-person shooters.
Oh, yeah. All right, you ready to talk out of your bumhole?
Absolutely.
Good.
Anybody that knows me a little bit knows that first-person shooters are my favorite type of game.
Mm, that's true. And you've said on the show, maybe in the post-show interview or something, that you, if you were to make your own video game, you've stated a number of times that it would be a shooter. That's what you would do.
Well, it's not just if I were to make my own video game. It's if I were to work in video games in general.
No matter what. If you worked in the business, if you work for Electronic Arts, whoever you work for, you would like to be working on a shooter.
If I worked in the business, I'd probably be a conceptual illustrator, and it would definitely be for a first-person shooter. I just love these type of games. I mean, they are just...
Now, what would be your second choice? Like a Japanese RPG kind of... That kind of game?
Yeah.
Really?
Actually, I love the first-person shooter. Mix it up a bit.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of everything, a little bit of role-playing game elements and a little bit of this and that. If I were to design a game, I'd probably go with first-person shooters, but that whole Final Fantasy style goes with me also.
Yeah, and I'm all about – we'll talk about this a little bit more because I actually think the future of FPSs will continue to evolve to include things like more role-playing elements and more character development and all that kind of stuff.
I think it's awesome when games like a good example. I don't know what a good example would be, but I think it's awesome when games just give you a choice. I remember several games, just not by name, that you can play it as a third-person action game, or you can play it as a first-person shooter, and they work perfectly in any of those ways.
Yeah, and games like even like Gears of War are technically third-person, but they have their roots are definitely – you know, heavy first-person shooting, and it's really
Gears
the same
of War
game.
Could easily be either one. I personally think Gears of War would be much more awesome if it let you pick.
if you could choose?
Yeah, if you can do it one way or the other, and why not?
How could you handle the whole cover system, though? I mean, if you had to go jump behind a brick wall or whatever, how would you do it in first person?
Well, it would be a lot more realistic, because basically when you're covering yourself, you're not supposed to see the enemy. So it would be a little bit more realistic.
Oh, yeah. So you could, like, but you're saying when you go up over and shoot at your enemy, you'd pop over and see where they're at and then shoot at them, right?
Exactly. So I mean, it would work. It would be cool for an extra challenge. Do you remember this? It's a pretty old game. It's from the 90s. It's called Dungeon Keeper.
Yeah, Dungeon Keeper. Yep. That's on my list.
Yeah, Dungeon Keeper 2, I mean, that was a totally different game. It was more like a strategy game.
Yeah. But you definitely had that first-person deal going.
Yeah, I mean, because you could possess any one of your minions, And, you know, when you went into their bodies, it was a first-person shooter. Of course, you didn't shoot anything. But,
that's true.
But, oh, actually, you did. You could possess one that was sort of like an archer.
Oh, yeah, projectile stuff. That's true. I remember that. I got a whole bunch of stuff in history about first-person shooters in general. What's interesting is, as far as... I'm sorry, I hit the microphone. As far as the general history of the genre, it's kind of interesting that the very beginnings, there are two games that are arguably the first-person shooters ever made, and nobody's really positive what they are, and they're not the ones I thought they were. So before I tell you what they are, I want you to guess.
So I'm assuming it's not Wolfenstein.
Correct. Not even close to Wolfenstein, which surprised me. First-person shooters came to be mostly recognized as a genre of game, like a real game type in the 90s, and that would have started early with Wolfenstein, no doubt. And that's an important moment in the evolution. However, apparently, in 1973,
wow,
a game was being developed called Maze War. In the summer of 73, single player made their way through a simple maze of corridors, rendered using a fixed perspective. Multiplayer capabilities with players attempting to shoot each other were probably added later in 73. They had basically two machines linked up via some kind of serial connection. And in 74, it went fully networked. We're talking about...
made out of Applejacks.
Yeah, and we're talking like mainframe, heavy-duty, you know, not two guys in their PCs at a LAN party. That's not how it worked back in 73, 74. I was, by the way, 3 years old.
I wasn't even...
Yeah, and now in 74, the rumor is a game called Spasm...
Spasm. Well, that sounds sexy.
It's spelled S-P-A-S-I-M, like
Spasm.
Spasm? Anyway.
It's Spasm.
Originally developed in the spring of 74, players moved through a wireframe 3D universe with gameplay resembling the 2D game Empire. Graphically, Spasm lacked even hidden line removal, but did feature online multiplayer all over the world on the university-based Play-Doh network.
Play-Doh?
Pretty nerdy, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so what was your first-person shooter? My very first one.
Okay. I came on board about the time that everybody thinks of first-person shooters being a big deal, which was the early 90s, and my first game was Wolfenstein 3D.
I loved it.
I did, too.
I couldn't get enough of that game.
I did, too. I loved it. I loved Spear of Destiny, the sequel. I thought that was great.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. I assume you bought those. I'm kidding. You probably pirated that.
Buy? What is this? Yeah. This is not the way of my people.
Your piracy starts back and far and wide, or whatever I'm trying to say.
Well, my very first computer game, for that matter, was F-15 Strike Eagle.
Oh, yeah? Ever?
Me playing on my computer, which was an IBM... I don't even remember. Of course, I'm not counting my experiences with my Apple IIc.
Yeah.
You know, I used to have an Apple IIc, and there were a lot of games on that computer. But, my first computer was sort of like games that people might remember and stuff like that came with the IBM and F-15 Strike Eagle.
Oh, yeah. That was a hell of a game.
But my first experience with first-person shooters, yeah, sure, it was Wolf 3D, but I did play several games that had first-person shooter elements in them. The most notable would probably be a Nintendo game that was not very successful and probably many few people remember it. This is a Nintendo game, an NES game. It was called Fester's Quest.
Fester's Quest. That game was a pain in my butt, dude. That game was hard.
Yeah, it was really, really hard. But it looked really amazing for a Nintendo game. I mean, it looked really great for a Nintendo game. And in Fester's Quest, throughout the levels, you'd enter buildings. And when you did enter buildings, the buildings were in, you know, FPS perspective.
Yeah,
and it wasn't actually animated. You'd see the corridor and you'd see doors and everything, and you'd advance almost by screenshots. I mean, you'd advance in the corridor. I don't know if you remember this part of the game. That game was super hard, though.
Yeah, and it was hard. Oh, I remember it being really hard. But the way that first person view worked was a lot of these old games, like Rescue on the Atari 5200, 3D Demon on IBM PC, Dungeons of Dragaroth on the TRS 880 color computer, Mini Maze. Yeah. I could go on. These all use this weird fixed perspective thing, where you'd walk into a room, and you just see what you could see. And if you moved forward, you'd tap once basically, and you would just sort of move another grid up. To the next wall or whatever. And if you turn right, it would be, it's like turning a page on a book. It wasn't a smooth animated transition or anything. And I remember how all those games kind of, I used to think, man, these suck. There's no way this stuff's going to, you know, last very long. So according to John Carmack, his inspiration for the Doom engine, or excuse me, for the, yeah, was it for the Doom engine? No, for the Wolfenstein 3D engine.
Yeah, that's where it all started.
Well, he claims his inspiration was Ultima Underworld, which came first. And
wait a minute, Ultima Underworld was before?
Was before Wolfenstein 3D. The way the story goes like this. While not technically a first-person shooter, Ultima Underworld came out in 92, is of importance to the game's genre's development because it was a 3D role-playing game developed by Blue Sky Productions, later merged with another developer looking for... blah, 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 blah. Anyway, don't worry about that. Unlike Wolfenstein 3D, Ultima Underworld supported many true 3D features, such as non-perpendicular walls, walls of varying heights, and inclined surfaces. A technology demo of this game was, in fact, John Carmack's inspiration for the Wolf 3D engine.
But so, wait a minute. Wow. I always thought Ultima Underworld was way after Wolf 3D, because Ultima Underworld is... way more complex.
Yeah,
I
mean, you'd think so. And it is way more complex. You're right about that.
I mean, you can, for starters, you can look up in Ultima Underworld, which doesn't sound like much nowadays, but yeah. Way back then, it was that totally blew me away. The fact that I could look up, the fact that it had different levels, that it had different heights.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Before that was done, back in 91, id Software released Hover Tank 3D and Catacomb 3D, which were basically the same engine, same technology. But these things were all precursors to what I guess inspired him out of Ultima Underworld. So that game probably doesn't get enough credit.
Absolutely. I mean, and most people always talk about the second one, you know, Ultima Underworld 2. And I found the first one a lot more enjoyable, especially because the Ultima Underworld succeeded in something that would have been very difficult for any other game. And it's that Ultima Underworld really made you feel claustrophobic. And, yeah. I mean, you definitely start getting stuffy playing that game. And the game was weird.
Yeah, it was a totally weird game.
As you advanced down, you know, the Stygian Abyss,
yeah,
it really started getting creepy.
Yeah, and it had a really it's hard to explain. Most games weren't that immersive back then, and that game really sucked you in. I remember thinking, "Wow, I don't know if I want to go any lower in this place." I mean, it was good at that. It was great at that. It had this great sense of lighting and stuff. I mean, I know it looks like crap today, but at the time that was unbelievable. I think it made me upgrade my PC at the time.
Well, I don't remember finishing it. I never finished it, but I do remember coming up to all the places where you could access the lower level. And I remember actually thinking to myself, you know, should I go down? I can go down, but should I?
Yeah. Now, if you had to guess, if somebody threw this question at you, what would be your answer? In 1993, Bungie released their first first-person shooter, and it was called what? We're talking the Halo Bungie. Do you know the name?
I don't know. I don't.
I would have said Marathon. I would have been wrong. It's actually a game called Pathways into Darkness, and I've never played it. It was an old Mac game, I guess. Mixed elements from the FPS with an adventure game. It was notable for having a stronger narrative component than its contemporaries. However, Pathways only experienced limited commercial success, partly due to its difficulty level. It says it is considered the spiritual ancestor of Marathon and the Halo series, which is, of course, also developed by Bungie. So interesting stuff right there.
Okay. Here's a good question for you. Okay, now, of course, you got the whole history of first-person shooters right there and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, we of course, we must have missed more than 90% of, you know, all the stuff that's come out.
Oh, sure.
If not more.
Sure.
But, okay, now, what were the first-person shooters that really stood out to you? Not because they were good.
Yeah.
Not because they were good, but because they were doing something that you hadn't seen before.
I can tell you that in a complete list. Here they go.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Wolf 3D blew my mind. I'd never seen anything like it. I have to give that credit. That blew my mind. Doom blew my mind in equal fashion. It was such a step forward. I thought Doom was insane.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was awesome. The next one I'd have to give, and the one that probably gave me the most overall joy, like just the most fun, the most modding, the most crazy stuff I ever did with a shooter, it has to be Quake 1. And so far, we're just in id territory here. Then I'd have to say Tribes did something totally new and blew my mind. The Unreal Tournament series took what I loved about Quake and made it fun again. Half-Life really was the first time in a long time that story was more important than anything else. So that was huge. I knew after Half-Life 1, I knew games would be different. I just knew they would be. Things like BioShock, things like, Fear, Far Cry, all those kinds of games, they owe a lot to Half-Life. Counter-Strike as a tactical, sort of more realistic-based sort of shooter-type experience. That was a whole new thing, because up till then, it's all space guns and blob guns and, you know, crazy shotguns and things that don't exist in real life. And Counter-Strike sort of said, well, let's try to bring, you know, a little bit of realism into it. And I think while there are other games that came before that, retail-wise, like some of the original Rainbow Six games and things like that, Counter-Strike really made it mainstream, and it was free, and it was a good time. I could go on. I'll say lately, things that have really been impressive to me are things like Portal. Portal just... Have you played Portal yet?
No.
Dude.
I haven't been able to.
Dude. You've got to play Portal.
I want to play Portal, but I haven't been able to.
Portal is one of those seminal moments, though. It's like... You look back and go, which one's had the most impact? I'll be able to, 10 years from now, look back and go, holy crap, Portal was just so cool. It changed my brain. I mean, that's how cool that game is. Things like Team Fortress, BioShock, the Battlefield games, Halo, the Call of Duty series right now, I'm a huge fan of. I think Call of Duty 4 is genius. And then there's some others I think that are pretty inspirational on the console side. I think GoldenEye and later Perfect Dark, those games were a big deal, and it showed that you could do this sort of thing on a console, on a standalone unit that didn't require a computer, and you could still have fun. And more these days, and everything you read, I mean, most of the big name, really high profile, can't wait to get my hands on it shooters that are being released on a regular basis, they're all coming to consoles first. It's crazy. It didn't used to be this way. It was like a weird thing to see a shooter on a console like that. Now it's kind of like, well, where are you going to get Gears of War first? Where are you going to get Halo? Where are you going to get, you know, lots of games? And while the PC still gets its fair share of titles, it's no longer kind of the launch platform for the big name stuff coming. And they made even Unreal Tournament 3, which everybody made a huge stink about and how great it was going to be. It hit the PC first, but it wasn't, but I don't know, not even a month, and it was on the PS3, and they were pushing really hard for PS3 compatibility and running with mods and all the community stuff that you could do on a PC. And I don't know why this is. Maybe there's more money in consoles. Maybe they have better control over the final game. I don't know what the reasons are, but it's fascinating to me to see the consoles take the shooter market away from PCs, where it was born and arguably where it still controls the best and looks the best, for that matter. So I don't know. It's interesting to me. So those are mine. Okay. Do you have any I didn't list that
Oh yeah, I got some shady ones that. Okay, one of them I don't actually have a name for the game. I forgot the name. The name had the word shadow in it. I don't remember the rest. Not maybe it was Shadow.
It's not one of the thief games or something like that.
No. Okay, in this game, old first-person shooter. I'm talking about
Rise of the Triad. Oh no, sorry.
No, I was going to talk about Rise of the Triad later on.
Sorry.
But this one. Okay, in this game, you played a character that could turn into different types of beasts.
Altered beast.
So
not really a shooter. I can't think of what it would be. You could turn into other beasts.
Yeah, you were a sort of warrior, and along the game you'd get powers that would allow you to turn into some sort of gargoyle or some sort of werewolf, stuff like that. And it was really old, and it had this kind of mixed up story to it and everything, but it was really, really interesting. And it was very cool to me because in that game, like, for example, you would turn into one of the beasts and you would attack with your claws and stuff like that. And I had come from, you know, playing Doom and Wolf 3D, where basically you just have a gun all the time.
Yeah,
and
true.
That really stood out for me. And it had like a sort of story, and it had a little bit more of a fantasy element to it. So that was really different.
Do you remember how long ago this was? When was this? I'm trying to pick the game in my...
This is early 90s.
Early 90s? All right. I'll keep looking. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Now, another defining moment for me in 3D gaming, you know, in first-person shooter gaming, was in Doom. The first time I played Doom, and it's a very simple thing. You know, the way your gun would just bob around while you... While you ran. I remember once I was at my friend's house playing Wolf 3D. And, you know, we were just running around the scenario, chasing Hitler, stuff like that. You know, regular stuff.
Normal
to
stuff,
do.
Sure.
Yeah, chase Hitler. And his dad came in and he took a look at the screen. And he said, so what is, like, the guy, you know, running around in a little car or something that he doesn't move? And then, of course, came Doom, where you would just, you know, you ran and your gun, you know, went back and forth.
Yeah.
That just made it feel so real.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I remember also in Doom that, you know, since sometimes the enemies appeared at different heights, you couldn't actually look up or down in Doom. So anyway, if there was an enemy at a different height and you shot at it, automatically the shot would go up.
Yeah.
Now this to me was amazing. You know, it was mind blowing. I'm like, wow, how does the game know that I want to shoot up?
Yeah. And now how does it know what I'm shooting at? And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean that was pretty amazing to me.
You know what was cool about Doom in those days though is I had a buddy, he and I worked together at this computer company, and we built a level using one of the Doom level editors somebody made, and built a level based on our office building. And we at night we'd run around and kill each other in the building, and you know, run into the bathroom and shoot each other all over the walls and whatever. That was fun.
Okay. I just want to stop right here and take a minute to You just said that you and your friend ran and shot each other all over the wall. Oh, that is gold.
Only you would pull that meaning. Absolutely. It wouldn't be a show without it. But here's the thing. What was great about it is we did that thing and we played in it. And I realize that today, if we were to do that, somebody somewhere would accuse us of like setting up, you know, like we're training to do a go postal at the office and kill everybody or something. I mean, politically, people lean that
Jack.
Way. Yeah. So that kid that built the level at school or whatever, he got in trouble for that. So whatever. Yeah. Jack Thompson, kiss my butt.
Okay, now Rise of the Triad was very interesting, but I mean, it had a lot of stuff. But to me, when you shot something, it left the bullet hole. And that to me was just mind blowing. I mean, wow.
Rise of the Triad did that, didn't they?
Yeah. You shot something and it would leave a bullet hole. Wow.
Yeah, I love that.
And also, Rise of the Triad, if I'm not mistaken, the enemies were.
You're breaking up.
We're,
there you go.
Oh, you're okay. Back. You're good. Okay.
Oh, maybe not.
The characters in the game. I'm here.
Okay.
Am I here or not?
Yeah, you're here.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, the characters in Rise of the Triad were sort of like movie captures of people.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. That was also pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, crap. Hold on. Hold that thought. When we come back, we got to take a break. We have a new sponsor. I have to insert ads, and I have to make sure I get the times right. When we come back, we'll talk more about O's picks. We also have a few of your picks. I want to talk about Duke Nukem and the announcement that there was a new teaser, which we saw and thought was stupid, or I did. But I have some thoughts about that and some interesting statistics about the time between Duke Nukem's original Forever title announcement back in 97, and now it will blow your mind. We'll talk about a few more things like some of our favorite music, best weapons, best story, best multiplayer, maybe even talk about how what we think the future holds for shooters, and a whole lot more when our program continues. Bonnie Fete Atoy. I refuse to listen to this episode because it sponsors commercialism and wants me to go out and buy things. Call me a jerk if you will. It needs to be to make up for their small wieners. Guitar Hero. Guitar Hero is that game that lets you rock out to popular tunes. It does not involve poo.
In your face!
Oh. Brr. We are not doing it on the show. We are not doing it. As he actually gets it from the feces of Sylvester Stallone. You know what a
baguette is. I know what a baguette is. I just don't imagine there being a plethora of baguettes down in Colombia. I don't know why.
We. Hairy armpits, stinky feet, we.
And eventually, when you're a teenager, you'd have sex with pretty much about anything.
It's a Unix system. He doesn't tough me out. He doesn't make me scared.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay, mother humper.
And we're back. Thanks for hanging in there. We're talking about shooters this week. Don't ask me why. Today's the Christmas episode, the one right before Christmas. We've been doing Christmas stuff all month, and I decide, hey, let's talk about shooters. I have no idea why. I think it was brought on by this Duke Nukem thing, which we'll get to in a minute. Oh, you were talking about Rot. And then you brought up one I haven't heard of. What was that last one you said?
Heretic.
Heretic.
Okay, whatever.
I was like, heretic? What the crap is heretic? It's heretic. Okay, yeah, that was a great game. Oh, I loved Heretic. And then Hexen, right?
But Hexen, Hexen was sort of like the continuation of Heretic.
And it used, the first one used Doom's engine, and I think the next one used... Quake. Yeah, that's right. That's cool.
But that was Hexen 2. I'm not sure if Hexen 1. I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, and I can't believe you didn't mention it. Of course, Duke Nukem. Duke Nukem 3D.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude.
I mean, wow. Wow, I played that game for... I just played that game far too much.
What did you think about this teaser thing that they're going to really do a... stupid sequel. Not stupid. Well, I mean, I hope it's great, but what do you think about the whole thing?
Well, okay. I'm going to have to admit that I really liked... Well, no, it's not admitting. Everybody liked the Duke Nukem 3D game. I mean, it was awesome.
It was great, yeah.
I never really liked... And who knows if I might get any heat for this, but I never really liked Duke Nukem.
As a character, you don't like him.
Yeah, I never really liked him. To me, it was all just a little bit too... I couldn't connect. Okay, you see, here's the thing. When I played Doom, I liked to imagine I was actually the Marine, you know, stranded on Mars, on my own, stuff like that.
Okay.
And you know, I kind of like to try and see if I could feel like that. Because to me, that is basically the beauty of first-person shooters, that... sort of get into the character.
Yeah.
And I try to do that with every game, you know, sort of feel like the guy. But with Duke Nukem, I don't even want to.
Well, he was basically an amalgamation of like Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone in that 80s kind of American over-the-top, 300 bullets wrapped around him, take everybody out kind of tough guy thing. And I have to admit... it's not really my cup of tea either. It didn't really, you know, it cracked me up, and I thought a lot of it was really funny, but it's not a character I can relate with.
Yeah, I think those characters can be funny, and in Duke Nukem 3D, it was funny and fun. It had good weapons. It had a lot of awesome stuff to do and everything.
Yeah.
But now, you know, where they're taking it that they're just trying to make it look like all better and all, you know, with the latest graphic engines from 10 years ago and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, I just don't like the art direction that I saw in the teaser. I'd
it looked,
no,
it looked
I'd
a,
go,
a little stiff, didn't it? Or a little old, like
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at it and I'm like, well, you know, I've seen a lot better than this. And I was thinking I'd take it artistically, I'd take it in the direction of, you know, those Team Fortress images you keep on showing on your site?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'd try to make it look like.
Yeah, more like kind of an Incredibles kind of thing. And that other thing felt like a bad 3D studio. In fact, when I first saw it, I went, uh-oh, this was a hoax. This whole thing was a hoax. This isn't really them.
It looks amateur.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm okay if the game's great, then fine. Amateur's fine with their little pre-rendered whatever. But I just wasn't impressed. And moreover, look at this. Okay, I got to read you some of these. This is freaking awesome. Between the time it was announced on April 25th, 1997... Duke Nukem Forever was announced that day, okay? Here are some things that have been accomplished since that was announced, and we still don't have the game. Final Fantasy, popular video game series. I'm talking about complete series that have been released. So Final Fantasy, in the main series, has released Final Fantasy 7 through 12. Cell phone games called Before Crisis, Dirge of Cerberus, Lost Fantasy 7, Dirge of Cerberus Lost Episode, the whole Tactics series, the Crystal Chronicle series, which are three of them, remakes numbering 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, games featuring Final Fantasy characters, including all the Kingdom Hearts stuff, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, movies and anime series and concerts based on the Final Fantasy series, Spirits Within, Unlimited entire series, Seven Advent Children, and Dear Friends Entire World Tour. Grand Theft Auto has released Grand Theft Auto, Grand Theft Auto Color for the Game Boy, Grand Theft Auto London, Grand Theft Auto London 1961. I could go on. Grand Theft Auto 2, then 3, Vice City, San Andreas, Advance, Liberty Series Stories. I could go on. Legend of Zelda.
And they'll probably finish the new one, too.
Exactly. Legend of Zelda, this is crazy. Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Oracle of Ages, Oracle of Seasons, The Wind Waker, Four Swords, Zubba Zubba Zubba, all the way up to Twilight Princess. That's like 12 games. The Sims, the original Sims game, and every expansion that has ever come out.
Which is basically...
hundreds of games, including Sims 2 and all its expansions. Other popular series... Over 75 games based on the Mega Man universe.
Wow.
Over 50 games based on the Star Wars universe. Featuring.
Wait a minute. 75 games based on the Mega Man universe?
Yeah, and 12 featuring Mega Man universe character cameos in addition to that. Which just blows my mind.
I barely know about like 10 or 12 Mega Man games.
Mostly Japan. It's mostly Japan, I'm guessing. That could be, who knows? Mario's appeared in 58.
You need to be Japanese.
That's true. Mario's appeared in 58 different video games since then. Every massive multiplayer online game ever and expansion, with the exception of Meridian 59, have all come out. Every Dance Dance Revolution, every Pokemon, every Unreal, every Quake. Oh, no, excuse me. Quake 2, 3, and 4. Quake 1 was already up. Every Tony Hawk. Daikatana began development 10 days before Duke Nukem. man. Anyway, there's a ton more. I could go on and on and on. I won't, but it's everything from video game.
Well, it kind of makes you think a little bit, you know, how things go on in there. If they're still actually producing the game, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're just like, the ultimate masters of procrastinating and goofing off at work.
Yeah.
And making your boss... I mean, it does make you wonder. I mean, does their boss think that they're working?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, even Microsoft, a company who people think are slow to release new versions of Windows, they've released five consumer-oriented versions of Windows and might release Vista Service Pack 2 before Duke Nukem hits shelves. Netscape Navigator 4 was released. Dude, freaking, this is the best one. When Duke Nukem Forever was announced, the fastest processor available at the time to consumers was 233 megahertz Pentium 1. Since then, the clock speed of consumer processors have increased 16 times, 32 times if you count dual cores, and the fabrication process has decreased from 250 nanometer to 65 nanometer. That's just insane. I mean, there's tons of these things. I could go on and on and on, and I won't. But They talk about the movies that are filmed. All three Star Wars prequels have come and gone. The entire Lord of the Rings trilogy. Every Pixar movie except Toy Story. Every movie, animation, and video game from the Matrix series. That's just crazy. Anyway, you get the idea.
Why do they even continue doing it? Why don't they just give it up?
Well, I saved the best for last. Things that have taken less time than Duke Nukem Forever's development. The Beatles formed, released every single one of their albums, and broke up. During this time, they also toured the world several times. So in that same amount of time, that happened. Led Zeppelin released 7 albums, 9 singles, and toured around the world, crossing international borders 27 times, not counting mainland Europe. That's just crazy. The Wright brothers designed and flew their first airplane in less time. Jeez. The United States' entire space program to put man on the moon, from Kennedy's challenge to the landing. This is terrible.
And that is with a computer that was probably not even a fraction of powerful as my personal computer right now.
Yep. And if you're listening, anyone at 3D Realms, the American War for Independence was shorter. The United States Civil War was shorter. World War I was shorter. World War II and the entire Manhattan Project were shorter. Even if you tack on the movie based on the Manhattan Project, it's still shorter. The United States involvement in the Vietnam War was shorter. So,
that's okay. Funny. I only have one thing to say to 3D Realms. Yeah. Okay. When the game finally comes out, we already know that it is a game that took at least 10 years in the making, and that's if they. And that's it. That's if it comes out right now.
Yeah.
I mean, if it comes out right now, we're talking about 10 years since announcement.
Yep.
When the game finally comes out.
Which it seems like it will now. There's a reasonable chance.
It has got to be. I mean, it really has to blow. It really has to, like, expel my balls out of their sack.
Wow.
Can I say that?
Wow. Sure. Okay. Sure did. That sounds painful, painful and terrible. But does this teaser make you think that that's what we're going to get? It doesn't mean.
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not.
In fact, I don't know how they could ever live up to this. Here's what I honestly believe, though. That trailer was crap. They're not actually going to release the game. All it was to say, well, it's been 10 years. We need to fuel the fire a little bit, and we're going to go another 10 without doing nothing. I swear that's what they're doing.
Well, the longer it takes, the better I expect it to be.
Well, it's more valuable to them. And I would like to know, honestly, what is 3D Realms doing otherwise? What other things do they do? I don't see a lot of games in the store with 3D Realms' name on it. I think Max Payne might have been developed in part by them or something. But I know of nothing else. And that game alone is 5 years old or something. So I don't know, dude. It just kind of blows my mind. Blows my mind.
Max Payne. I remember the second Max Payne game. I got it in Spanish.
Whoa! Why? Oh, just because that's
where, yeah.
That's
somebody, how you get it. You know, the where I got it. I got it in Spanish, and I was not able to finish it. I simply was not able to finish it because I could not stand the way these people would talk.
Oh man,
it was amazing.
That's so funny that you speak Spanish, but the Spanish translations, you just hate them.
Well, they're horrible, and no, they just don't sound well.
Yeah,
no, that's, they just that's don't true. Sound well.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, well, let's pick some. This is some of the favorites I want to pick. So I had these categories because they sound good to me. But like best music, best weapons, best story, best multiplayer. I'm gonna pick best music from any of these games ever.
Okay.
I think I'm going with. Oh, that's a harder question than I intended it to be. I mean, I'm not going to pick some of the newer stuff where it's very cinematic, and because they're just getting a lot more expensive and orchestral and all of that.
Well, you know what my pick would be?
What?
Quake 2. The entire soundtrack was composed by Trent Reznor.
Oh yeah, that one. I thought it was Quake 1 that was.
No, it's Quake 2.
Oh, whichever one had Reznor, that's probably going to be my pick too. And you still
well, he
and you
works
have to
a lot of that.
Yeah, and you have to like the MIDI stuff that was in Doom as well. I like that stuff too. I mean, back in the day, it was kind of cool.
Yeah, but to me, one of the best soundtracks in first-person shooters, Quake 2.
Yeah.
And entire Halo. Soundtrack by Trent Reznor.
Halo's got good music. But again, it's kind of like
Yeah, it's very John Williams kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't know if that counts, because back in the day when Quake was going on, it was like Reznor's a fan, and he calls Carmack and says, dude, let me do your music. And he's like, oh, yeah, sweet, because they're all a bunch of, you know, Trent Reznor lovers anyway. And it's more like this grassroots kind of thing going on, whereas now it's, you know, all right, we're going to pay the London Symphony Orchestra to do this, and how much is that going to be a part of our budget? We only have $40 million left. Okay. I mean, that's kind of what it seems like today. These things are just too expensive.
Yeah, but that would be my vote for best soundtrack.
All right, best weapon of any of these games, the best weapon. Let's single it down to one weapon. Mine's
okay,
easy.
Okay, what's yours?
Mine's easy. It is the flak cannon from Unreal Tournament. I absolutely loved that gun.
Yeah, the flak cannon from Unreal Tournament.
Yeah, it was basically like a crazy shotgun in a way, space shotgun that shot out shards of this like hot metal. But it also had an alternate fire where it like did it like a grenade, sort of. It was this explosive alternate thing. And there was nothing more satisfying than hitting guys in the head with that alternate fire. I just loved it.
Wow, that is a...
It's a hard choice, dude, because I could easily say Quake 1 rocket launcher or the nail gun or something from the gravity gun from Half-Life 2. Or there's a lot of stuff.
Well, I mean, I got a lot of choices. I'd have a lot of honorable mentions, you know, like the gravity gun and that one weapon in Unreal that shot like discs, you know.
The Razor. Like what was that called?
Yeah,
the Razor.
That one was pretty cool.
That would lop heads off. That was great.
And I also would mention the rail gun from Quake.
Yeah.
Quake 2. It was pretty awesome the way, you know. But to me, basically in any first-person shooter where you're using weapons, the weapon I almost always enjoy the most is just a shotgun.
Really?
Yeah, I just love, you know, I always go for the shotgun.
Well, shotgun's fun, no question about it. And that's probably why I like the flak cannon. I guess it wasn't called was it cannon? Yeah, flak cannon. Oh, that gun was great. And they've never done it quite as good since. It's kind of like the rocket launcher in Quake. The rocket launcher was never as good again. There was something about that original one. Plus, it was a big phallic symbol on the screen all the time.
yeah, it was.
That game used to make my wife sick. We'd go to the office and have big LAN parties at the office at late at night, and she couldn't do it for more than 10 minutes. She'd get sick. I don't know what it was. She can play other shooters. That game just killed her. Okay. Now let's move to best story. So this would be single-player games, and this would include Dooms and, you know, Wolfenstein 3D. But what... Of all the shooters you've ever played, which gets the best story for you? These are hard.
The best, yeah.
And people should know I'm kind of springing these on O. I didn't give them any time to like think about this.
Yeah. I basically found that about
the topic.
Yeah. About an hour or two ago.
That's how I roll.
Best, yeah. That's how he rolls. Mm-hmm. Best story. Okay. Wow. That one is hard.
Yeah. I'll tell you mine while you're thinking.
Yeah, go ahead.
My favorite story is... I'll give you my top two. My favorite story is the original Half-Life. And I would say Half-Life 2 is my second favorite. And if I had to pick a third, I'd probably go Bioshock. I really like the story in Bioshock. I like the whole feel and aesthetic of it. I thought it was trippy. I really liked it a lot. And I have to say, Call of Duty 4, great story. But if I had to pick my best, it's the Half-Life series. Too easy to pick.
Okay. Yeah. I got a pick. I can't really choose a best story because I have so much stuff to choose from. I'm a big fan of the Half-Life series, you know, the story that they've been developing in it. I really enjoy the Bioshock story, although I have not gone through Bioshock yet. But I really had a lot of fun. And the story played a great deal in it playing. And this is also, to me, one of the most innovative first-person shooters I've ever played. No One Lives Forever. No One Lives Forever 2.
That was a great series, dude. I forgot about that. The one that was kind of like girl James Bond.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
I mean, just the setting was so innovative because you would never have expected one of these games to get made into a first-person shooter. And the character was a woman, which was I mean, you don't see that very often.
That was less popular,
games.
Especially back then. I mean, now it's a little more common. Back then, it was way uncommon.
Yeah, and the game was hilariously funny. I mean, it was really, really, really funny, the game. You had a lot of fun because the game made a lot of jokes on itself.
Yeah, NPCs that were talking, like you're stealthing around and you'd hear two guards talking. Half the time in that game, I'd sit and just listen because they were funny, dude.
They were friends. Like you got into the villain's base, and the guards were talking about the new lava that they had installed. That it was really nice. I mean, the new lava looks amazing and stuff like that. Or a couple of ninja females talking about how their grandmother was, you know, what was really annoying and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was awesome.
The game was awesome. I really love that game. No One Lives Forever 2.
Underrated series for sure.
And the story was. It was a comedy.
Yep.
I had a lot of fun with that game.
Yeah. If you were like a James Bond fan at all, that game was like the perfect parody of James Bond. It was great. That's interesting. I didn't know you played that. Let's see. Okay, let's do the last one. I was going to do best multiplayer, but I think it's arguable that they all kind of just do stuff from each other. I would say the last one should be which is our favorite character, because the one thing that's unique about most first-person shooters, not all but most, is you are the protagonist. You are playing the dude. Or chick who's going to save the world. So if you had to pick your favorite ever, I know it's not Duke Nukem, who would it be?
Okay, you got yours?
Yeah, I'm going to go with somebody who's a little bit unconventional. And by the way, the worst story, Quake 3. Just throwing that out there.
It doesn't have a story.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. They tried.
It was like this tournament thing. It's kind of Unreal Tournament had it too, but they still had a better one, and it was still they were both kind of just this multiplayer experience, but they both had these cheese ball crap stories, and Quake 3's was worse. All right, I'm gonna say my favorite character of all of these games would probably have to be. Oh, I'm gonna get some heat for this because. People want me to say Gordon Freeman, and people want me to say the Marine from Doom, and I know that's what they want me to say, but I'm going to say the British dude that I only got to play for one level of the game when I was a sniper. I can't remember his name now, but he had this cigar. People know who I'm talking about in Call of Duty 4, and I know it's recent, but that game, the story of that game, and some of the moments in that game, including the big nuke moment and a few others, really got to me.
I need you to make a British accent. That I just need it.
Oh, I can't do it.
No, what do you mean you can't do it?
All right, Here it is. Oi! That's as good as you get. that game and whatever his name was, I can't remember his stinking name, but I just thought he was a great character. And when you got to play him for a level, there was something about that, and it was really intriguing, and the story was trippy, and I just thought that was awesome. So I'm going to stick with that, not just because that game's getting the most play from me right now. Well, partially that's true, but also that was just really affecting. I think the guys at Infinity Ward just outdid themselves with the single player in that game. The gameplay, it's a lot like all the other Call of Duties, but man, that was fun, and it was great. All right, tell me yours.
Mine is easy. I thought the character was really cool when I played the first game. He looked amazing. He always looks great. And as soon as I read the books, I fell in love with the character even more. And to me, my favorite character in a first-person shooter, and the one I like to feel the most like I'm him.
Can I ask you, can I guess for, oh, you're going to say Master Chief. Dang.
Yeah, sorry.
I was going to guess and say, is it the Indian from from that, what's that game called? Crap. The one that just came out, like, last year. Started on a reservation. The aliens invade. The Indian guy goes on a rampage. We don't have a chat room tonight, so I can't... Nobody can help me out. All right, so you picked Master Chief. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Master Chief. And when you read the books and you get a little bit more into the Halo story, which is amazing, by the way... I totally forgot that when you said, you know, best story, because I think the story that the whole Halo series develops is amazing. I wouldn't include it so much because it depends. I mean, for the story to really be great, you need the books.
Yeah.
So that doesn't count. Yeah. But You know, like I said before, when I play one of these games, I like to feel like I'm the character. And considering what the Master Chief is, what he can do, and the responsibility that he carries, when you play Halo, if you play to sort of feel like you're the Master Chief, you really get a whole lot of out of the game. I honestly do not love some of the characters that most people love. I have no special feelings towards Gordon Freeman.
Interesting. Your favorite?
I mean, Gordon Freeman? Yeah, yeah. I don't really. It's one of my favorite games ever, and I really don't care much for Gordon.
You don't like him being the protagonist in the game. You know what I was going to say also? We could probably talk about villains. I'll just mention my favorite villain of all time is the computer thing in Portal. And I know these are two new games, but man, they outdid themselves. That's easily my favorite villain of all time.
Oh, I never really played. I haven't played Portal
you've
yet.
Gotta
I
play
will
it,
say
dude.
That
you've got to play it.
I will say that I love. I have to give a special mention to the big baddies. The big daddies.
Oh
are
yeah,
amazing.
That's true. That's actually kind of a hard. I don't really see them as enemies. I see them as fallen. You know, it's like a tragedy kind of a thing where they shouldn't be where they are. That game was great.
You know, you need to say that kind of stuff with the British accent I asked you for.
Oi! I can't do it. All right, I want to give I want to give a quick shout out to a few listeners who submitted some names. Max Westland says Day of Defeat. He mentioned Counter-Strike. He also mentioned the Medal of Honor series. Team Fortress. Zorro said Unreal Tournament. Let's see. Dark Mantle. He really loved Fear. Thought that was great.
Fear was fun.
Yeah, Fear was cool. Quibix mentions all sorts of things like Enemy Territory, Portal, Bioshock. A lot of stuff we've mentioned already. Perfect Dark is on a lot of people's different lists. Robo mentioned this XIII. I don't know if that means, what is it, 13?
I think it's 13.
Is it 13? Hey. Was it 13 or is it supposed to be... I never knew.
I think it's 13.
I read the comic book, so who knows. Rainbow Six, the Ghost Recon series, those are all great. The Specialists, I have no idea what that game is.
Is it based on the movie, maybe?
I don't know. It doesn't say.
Okay.
Let's see if anyone else. Dystopia was an a Half-Life 2 mod that Zajip really likes. Big thanks to Life's a Glitch, Garmus, S2, David Strauss, Lee Larico, Seamus even mentioned a few. He mentioned Geometry Wars. Not really a first-person shooter there, Seamus, but close. And remember, the object of the game is to shoot the shapes. Let's see, Duck Hunt. Very funny. Anyway, a lot of good suggestions there, so thanks everybody for doing that. We appreciate it. And anything else you want to say about shooters and... kind of where they're headed or anything?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
You know, one of your best this, best that. Okay.
Yeah.
Best scenario, you know, best level.
Best level scenario?
Yeah.
Oh,
for
man.
You.
Okay.
Okay.
I am going to take Call of Duty 4 out of the running because it's so fresh in my mind that I jump to that every time. There's some wonderful scenarios in it. The nuke going off, trying to stop the sun before he kills himself. There's some really amazing setups in that game.
No, but I mean scenarios you can just travel through.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm going to say is my favorite would be, can it be just a level? I guess when you say scenario,
yeah, sure, okay. sure, yeah, that's probably what I meant.
I think the two base, or what was it called? Two base, two flags, whatever it was. The floating asteroid level in Unreal Tournament that was basically just two towers and a strip of land between them. What was that called? My brain doesn't work. Anyway, that was awesome. And I had, up till that point, never really seen anything quite that cool, I thought, where you were having this amazing battle for domination on a floating asteroid that was... these two huge towers with just a piece of dirt between them. I thought that was just about the coolest thing ever. So I'm giving it that. I'm sure there are others I can't think of, but that one's a good one. What would you say? Don't say the driving in Half-Life 2, because that drove me nuts.
The what?
I didn't like
the
that.
Drive?
Yeah, like the little hover boat craft thing. I got tired of that.
It was No. I would mention one in Half-Life 2, which is when you're sort of like in a town square, surrounded by rebels. You're fighting against a couple of Striders.
Yeah.
That part of the game is amazing. But again, No One Lives Forever 2, when you fight against the ninja leader, you get into a trailer house. And you got a katana and everything, and you're fighting against her. And there's a tornado, and the tornado picks up the trailer house. And you fight against her while the house is like being tossed around by the tornado.
Oh, I remember
inside
that.
Of the house.
Yeah, that was awesome. I forgot about that. That game needs to be higher on my list of favorite games. That was awesome. Yeah, that's a cool scenario. When I first saw Shambler and Quake, that was cool. Oh, there's just too many. Too many.
Yeah, yeah.
The Shambler does not get enough play. I think the Shambler's awesome. Oh my gosh, we're out of time. We're going to go ahead and close it down here, folks. Good show. We're sad we didn't see Brian. He never did pop in. I've been chatting back and forth, and he hasn't answered. So apparently he is not coming. But I do want to thank O for being here. Thanks to our sponsor, GoDaddy.com. Again, those codes are WOW1, WOW2, and WOW3. No. Did I say WOW? Sorry, it's Life1, Life2, and Life3. I'm using the instance codes. They'll save you money, too, so either way. So thanks to those guys. Really appreciate that. Thanks for the new sponsor, Audible.com. You'll hear that tonight as well. Thanks to everybody who participated. Big thanks to Fletcher, Scott Fletcher, for that amazing intro that just cracked me up. Was awesome, just what the doctor ordered tonight. So thank you so much for that. Thanks to Rob Gehobers for our great theme music, including this Christmas theme that we will use for the very last time tonight. And I can't wait to see what he has for 2008. The rumor is he's got something up his sleeve, so I'm pretty excited about that. Thanks to Sebastian for our mashups, of which we had two today. And thanks to everybody else who contributes to the show, and especially you guys for listening. Sorry, no chat room. But we hope you all have a wonderful Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Festivus for the rest of us, whatever it is you're celebrating this year. We do have one more show before the end of the year, and then it will be 2008. So we'll see you guys next week for show number 165.
Hey there everyone, it's Gareth from Scotland, Garfunkel on the forums. Just wanted to wish everyone, that's the Extra Life crew and the community of course, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Have a good one.
Hi everyone, this is Mark with your 3-minute movie review. Today's movie, I Am Legend, starring Will Smith.
Nothing happened the way it was supposed to happen. 6 billion people on Earth when the infection hit. I am a survivor living in New York City. I will be at the South Street Seaport every day at midday when the sun is highest in the sky. God didn't do this. We did.
Now, I'm anticipating that many people will be mad at me with this review, but at least hear me out. The day after seeing this movie, I did run into a 19-year-old in my neighborhood who had seen it twice in 2 days, so he obviously was ecstatic about it. But anyway, let's get into the show. I have to say, I probably jinxed myself concerning this movie. How? Well, I read the book before seeing the film. And as most of you know, in all cases, it makes it almost impossible to fully enjoy a movie because you're constantly reviewing it, but you're comparing it against the book. Of course, they've changed some things, which is to be expected, but they did try to keep it close to the intent of the original story. Anyone who's seen the trailers could probably give you a synopsis of the film, but here goes. Will Smith stars as Robert Neville, the lone survivor of a virus gone wrong that transforms people into vampire-like zombies. Neville also happens to be the brilliant genetic scientist who was already trying to find a cure before the entire population was wiped out. Neville tries to maintain his sanity without any other human contact, all while trying to find a cure and surviving each night as the vampires are out. There are some really cool things about this show. First of all, they did an amazing job transforming New York into a ghost town. The work they did was just phenomenal. I would really like to see the making of documentary on this part of the movie. I thought Will Smith also did a great job holding your attention. He spent most of the movie acting against a dog, and he made it really interesting, so, you know, kudos to him. However, I was really disappointed with the vampires. They're all CGI, and they look like they're out of a video game. They just don't look real at all. So every time they were on screen, it took you out of the movie. And I've asked about 4 different people who've seen the movie what they thought of the creatures, and they all agreed with me, so I don't think I'm being overly critical. I think the movie studio really dropped the ball here. As I said before, the movie's been altered from the original story, which is understandable. The end of the book has an ironic twist on cultural perceptions, and the phrase, "I am legend," is actually the last words in the book. However, I really liked the ending of the book. Therefore, having it transformed in the movie just wasn't very satisfactory to me. They tried to add a little twist to it, but I don't think it worked very well. They could have done better setting it up. Now, my young neighborhood friend thought it was fantastic. Having never read the book, he was totally into the movie. So I figured that those who aren't aware of the original story may enjoy this more than I did. I felt it was okay, but not very spectacular. I Am Legend is rated PG-13 for intense sequences of sci-fi action and violence.
Like smoke over his shoulder. He checked each window to see if any of the boards had been loosened. After violent attacks, the planks were often split or partially pried off, and he had to replace them completely, a job he hated. Today, only one plank was loose. Isn't that amazing? He thought.
Hello again, Extra Life Radio listeners. This is Rico from TreksinSciFi.com with this week's review. What you heard at the beginning there was just a small audio sample from the audiobook I Am Legend, which was written by Richard Matheson back in the 50s. That's the audio drama from the book, unabridged. You can find that on iTunes. But I'm mainly going to talk about the new movie, of course, with Will Smith, also called I Am Legend, which just came out about a week ago in movie theaters. I went last weekend to see this with my son and really was blown away by it. I thought Will Smith did a great job in this movie. The movie, I thought, was very impressive. It had a lot of qualities and scariness and just all kinds of suspense. And just Will Smith did a great job because he basically had to carry the movie. He is I Am Legend. He is the legend in the movie. He is the sole survivor, I won't give too much away, but he is a survivor of a big plague that has happened. And again, I won't say too much, but the movie basically rests on his shoulders. Him and his dog companion are really the majority of the movie, and they do a great job with it, I think. I got pretty caught up into this movie. It's pretty emotional at times, and I think if you see it, if you like this kind of a film, if you like some science fiction, and something that's not set too far in the future at all, and, you know, when you think about it, it is something that could possibly happen, not too far-fetched, really. It is a very interesting movie. I really enjoyed it. Highly recommend going out to see it in the movie theater. I don't think it'll be nearly as much intense suspense and drama if you wait and watch it on DVD and your TV at home. So definitely go out, check it out in the theaters. This is Rico signing off for this week.
Fascinating.
Hi, this is Seamus, and I have a story. We're stuck in traffic, and it's snowing out. That is the end of my story. I hope you enjoyed it.
Hey, this is Jake from Portland, Oregon. I just wanted to say the thing I learned from Extra Life Radio is that the word Canadian means fake. Like Canadian bacon, definitely not real bacon. French Canadian, definitely not really French.
Hey, everybody at ELR. I was just wondering, what do you think with the Activision and Blizzard merger? Will that increase the amount of time that it'll take for us to get StarCraft 2, or decrease it? Because I like StarCraft 2. So let's see how quick we can get it. Alrighty.
I refuse to listen to this episode because it sponsors commercials.
commercialism and wants me to go out and buy things.
Since when did you become Dr. Evil, Scott? This is Tennessee Taylor with this week's weird question.
Hi, this is Seamus, and my friend Pooja ask you,
how are the graphics?
Indeed. Hey, Extra Life, why don't you talk more about Ninja Gaiden? You know, Ninja Gaiden 1, 2, 3, the whole thing about the Hiyabashi?
Wow. All
right. Bye.
Hey, Extra Life, this is Seth from webcomicbeacon.com. I just wanted to share a little story in case it gets happened to be played on the air. I had, last month I had bought a Wii that I saw at a Target. I snatched it up right away with, thoughts of grandeur of to sell it on eBay for a couple extra $100 to help me buy a couple more games. But decided to hold on to it for a while and just in case I came across anyone who really needed it. It turns out that my aunt and her family wanted to buy a Wii for the family as a family gift. That'd be their one present. And so they tried to go out after Thanksgiving, and obviously they did not find anything. So I, my mom told me this. I called my aunt, and I said, hey, I have a Wii here, and I can help you find some extra controllers, get a couple of games for it, and I'm not going to charge you anything extra, obviously, because they're family. So that's what I got. I got all the controllers they need. I got them a few good games to start off for a family event. We play Rayman Raving Rabbids, and of course, Wii Sports is going to go a long way for them. So I just wanted to share my little holiday story. And you know, I'm not a greedy person. It's, you know, it's good to help out the family. So there you go. Keep up the good work, guys. Catch you later.
Hey, Scott. This is Nate from the forums, or I guess you're probably going to be by Polychronopolis, my Xbox Live gamer tag. And I just helped them listen to last week's show. I was a little bit behind on it. But I was wondering what has happened to the Tuesday night Extra Life gaming nights where we play TF2 or Call of Duty 4 or whatever you decide you want to play that night, because I haven't seen it in the past couple weeks and kind of miss playing it with all the guys. We have a good time. So if we get that going again, that'd be awesome. I understand this Tuesday we, you know, couldn't really do it because it's going to be Christmas, you know, this coming week. But I don't know, maybe the week after that, if we can get it going again, that'd be awesome, right? Love the show. Thanks. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, I'm going to assume this is the Gobline. Hi, I'm Nora. I am French-Canadian, and I thought I would, you know, reveal all. No, not really. I don't know all. Anyway, so French-Canadians, mostly they're in Quebec, what with it being Quebec and all. There's a lot of them spread out in, like, Manitoba, Ontario, yeah, a little bit in the Maritimes. They're kind of spread out all over and concentrated in Quebec and then slowly moving across Ontario. Most of us speak English pretty damn well. Some of us don't, even the Franco-Ontarians. And I think it's not Francophone, it's Francophone. I think that's what the word you were looking for. And, yeah, I've been offended, finally. I was just waiting to be offended one of these days. Yay! Yeah, that's about it. Bye. Love you guys.
Drop the bass.
And remember, the object of the game is to shoot the shapes.